Hello everybody and welcome back to another spoiler review with me, Avoda Prince. Today we are talking about the latest Kiefer's Kane novel, Choose Your Enemies by Sandy Mitchell. Now this is the 10th novel. 10th? I can't believe it. It's crazy. For those of you new to the series, Kiefer's Kane is a commissar. And through his exploits, he's become a well-known and respected hero of the Imperium. But these novels present his, unvarnished opinions on events and mocks and plays up to people's view of him as a hero, when he's, for the most part, trying to avoid trouble and stay alive. Kind of. I mean, because despite what he says, he's actually really heroic. But he gets into these situations and his main imperative is to stay alive, but in order to stay alive, he often has to do things that that no sane person would do, or if someone was terrified, they wouldn't do. Which is kind of the mark of an actual hero, you know? But he doesn't see himself like that. He's like views himself as a normal person, and he thinks himself quite cowardly when no one else views him like that. But it's like his internal monologue, you know, his internal view of himself is, oh, everybody thinks I'm a hero, sweet, I can get away with stuff. And when he gets into trouble, like for instance, oh, okay, I better try and kill this person because I won't escape otherwise. You know, it's that kind of thing. So yeah, his actions are for the most part like self-preservation, and he often finds himself committing acts of extreme courage and bravery, often by accident, admittedly, but it has given him fame and respect, which he does use to try and make his life easier and also to stay alive. He has an aide named Jurgen, who stinks of sweat and halitosis and just general filth, and is also a psychic blank, which is one of the main reasons why Kane isn't dead in a ditch somewhere. He also has an ongoing romantic relationship, friendship, with an inquisitor named Amberly Vale, who sounds hot. So again, just to explain to those who haven't read the other books in this long-running series, which is, I don't know, it's like one of the most, it's never mentioned, or mentioned very rarely. I think the Horus Heresy sort of over outshone everything, really. And this is one of the real gems of the series, and still has that grim, dark, but comedic aspect to GW stuff that has lost, has been lost from a lot of things. And often that works completely, but sometimes some of the books, particularly some of the more recent ones, have been really serious. You know, there's no wink and a nod, you know? And I don't think that reflects humanity, to be honest. Often in the grimmest of times, people tell jokes. You know, these people are still human, after all. And yeah, Kane tells jokes, and there's also comedy written throughout it. So how it's laid out is, it's his memoirs, unvarnished memoirs, which are being edited by Amberly Vale, presumably after his death. I think that is what it says, he's dead at this point. So it's like his remembrances of his life and his service. And she's distributing them amongst other inquisitors for them to read, and it's quite popular, apparently. So she makes it available in all the archives for people to read. And these inquisitors are reading it, which again is quite funny, that they're reading this, you know, this look upon the Imperium that's got none of the, I don't know how to describe it. You can imagine it'd be funny. Like, for instance, if there was a Soviet commissar writing his remembrances and it was being distributed amongst the Politburo. You know what I mean? It'd be quite funny. And dark. Super dark. But that's a whole other thing. So she sort of adds footnotes to each page, explaining things that Kane mentions just offhand, or to add context or a comment to something he said. It's usually funny or informative. So Kane often leaves out big stretches of detail as well, and Amberly Vale often includes extracts from other writers, and particularly from the memoirs of General Sulla, who was a lieutenant who served with him and is serving with him in this novel as well, and she later rises to the rank of general, and she's a terrible writer, which Amberly Vale comments on continuously, which again is quite funny. And from the author's point of view, it's a quite convenient thing to be able to do to get yourself out of plot holes, or to stop yourself having to write an awkward scene, just to sort of break up the action, and then you can sort of return to it, which he often does, which I think is just a sort of bit of fourth wall breaking, a bit of a joke, you know. So hopefully that sort of lays out Kane generally to you guys. He's fought all kinds of enemies. Necrons, who he's fucking terrified of. Tau, who he kind of sympathises with the greater good to an extent, but they're filthy Xenos and they've got to go. But he's generally quite open to working with anyone as long as it keeps him alive, which is not the attitude a Commissar should have, which is why he doesn't voice that publicly. He's also had a lot of tangling with Chaos Cults, and one in particular with a sorceress named Emily, who he met in a previous novel. I think it was a short story, actually, and she tries to seduce him and sacrifice him to Slaanesh, and he escapes with no clothes on, or only some clothes on, I forget. But yeah, that's the kind of story we're dealing with. So what's happening here is the Valhallans, who he's serving with still, the regiment that was created by the merging together of a Valhallan regiment of female soldiers and a Valhallan regiment of male soldiers, which again was a great book as well, because it mentions a lot of the problems that would emerge from that kind of union of two forces with different requirements, which is quite nice. No one else mentions these kind of things in any other book series. So it's a planet called Drakea, and it's a small... So I like what he's done here, right? It's a star system, but it's got two centres of power. You've got Drakea on the outer rim, which is a series of moon colonies, mining world colonies, and they provide natural resources to the Forge World in the centre of the system, which is called Ironfound. But this place is quite independent. Drakea, they all be... I think it's the sun that's called Drakea, or the colony, I forget, I'd have to read it again. But one of these, the sort of capital mining colony, controls these other mining colonies, which all orbit this super gas giant, which is so big, it emanates its own energy, like a mini sun, like a half-formed sun, you know? So they're like a separate mini solar system in this solar system, which is a nice touch. I like that. I don't know why. I was like, that's cool, you know? So they get asked to go there because the inhabitants have been assaulted and raided by Eldar. Now, after a bunch of stuff happens, basically him slagging off the PDF and then fighting Eldar a few times, they go down into the mines and they stumble upon, he and Jurgen, stumble upon a Slaaneshi summoning, a ritual. Basically an orgy going on. And this is where the author, Sandy Mitchell, shows that he's still the best author around, one of the best authors at Black Library, underrated completely, and and probably why he's not allowed to write the Horus Heresy. Because he's just like, he's just talking about them having a big orgy and hermaphrodites and stuff throughout the book and throughout all these books. He's just like these degenerates having these orgies and all this messed up shit, and Cain just shoots them with a bolt pistol, often. And that's what happens here. Unfortunately, there's too many of them, and the summoning is almost a completion, and a demon starts to emerge. Then an Eldar Farseer and his warlock bodyguard show up and start throwing spears around and kill the demon. And also then Inquisitor Amberly Vale pops up, coincidentally. And they've all come from the Webway portal, which is on this planet. And yeah, they meet up with Cain. The Eldar and them sort of depart. The Eldar depart and they've sort of agreed to some kind of truce. But the Eldar are invading the system. And I like how it flicks between this and the memoirs of some explorer who's written sort of a traveller's journal, basically, and explains the sort of wider context. Again, clever use of that as a writing, as a tool to tell the story, I guess. Because Cain isn't going to mention this, because why would he? But this travelling person will mention, oh, there's Eldar attacks and, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's good. It's clever. So they're not too sure why the Eldar are attacking, but Amberly was on Ironfound, the planet in the system capital. And they entered the warp gate there underneath the main hive city and popped up here on this mining colony. So they all jump on a ship together with the entire regiment and decide to head for the planet because clearly something's going down and that's probably where it's going to happen. And the Eldar fleet appear in the system and began chasing them as a nice cat and mouse thing where they're trying to stay ahead of the Eldar. And in the end, the Eldar just leave them, which is strange. So they get to the planet. They meet with the governor. They set themselves up. Then there's an assassination attempt on Cain. Or at least he thinks on Cain. Or Cain does. And it's quite a nice thing. He ends up pulling his chainsword out in the cabin of this little fucking floating ground car. and has to carve this, like, so imagine a car that's floating, a limousine that's flying, right? The guy in the cockpit is an enemy, and Kane can't get in there because it's all locked up and they're flying through the sky. So Kane has to pull out his chainsaw and starts carving up the seat in front of him. And eventually there's a scuffle, and eventually Kane manages to take control of it and save his life. Later on, we find out they're actually trying to kill Jurgen because he's the most dangerous threat on the planet, being a blank, you know. Then they have a little expedition down into the hive, the underhive, to get to this warp gate and see if it's still open, because they blew it before they walked in it, which seems like an odd thing to them, for them to have done, Inquisitor Amberly Vale and her bodyguard. But, you know, whatever. They go down there, and it turns out it's still active. The Eldar have started an invasion. They're fighting their way through the underhive up to the upper hive. Still don't know why. But they run across a group of soldiers, and the soldiers have been ordered to gather up the spirit stones and send them up. Now, at this point, it becomes pretty obvious. It was sort of obvious anyway, but it becomes pretty obvious at this point that the governor is a Slaaneshi worshipper. I mean, it's blatant, you know. Anyway, they end up going to the orbiting space stations that are around the planet, like the plates that are around Terra. There's a big population of people, and it's like an industrialized or almost a forge world. So its output is sent out through these giant space stations, and obviously they're an important part of this planet's existence. So there's a nice little element that he's added in there to sort of build the world, you know. So the governor has a palace on that space station as well, to show how important they are. He doesn't just live on in the main hive, he lives above. I think because it mentions there was some kind of rebellion in the past, which again is a nice touch. Especially if you've been watching Expanse recently. You understand, you've got to show the people you care. Now the Eldar are attacking the Imperials, and it's like a siege at the moment, with them coming through the warp portal and fighting through the bottom of the hive, and the fleet attacking the orbital defences and taking out the fleet and stuff. And in the end, Kane goes with the governor to his palace. He notices he's taking a big crate of stuff. Oh, and this was a nice touch. The reason why he gets an inkling, he realises what's going on, is Jurgen sits on the crate in this in this wagon that they're travelling in. And the Psyker with Amberly, which is a great character as well, who's a bit loopy because she's a Psyker, she says that they all went silent. All the voices went silent. And it's like, oh, it's because he's blank. And he sat on the crate with all the spirit stones in. So they eventually go to this. So it's happening in the middle of this maze in the palace, you know, like a shrub maze, you know, where you walk around and you can't find your way. And it's all starting to go Slaaneshi, warpy. The branches of the things are turning into flesh. So Kane pulls out his chainsaw and starts hacking through, and gets covered in gore and stuff, because they are starting to turn into flesh, you know, the tree roots, the branches, you know, that sort of thing, the leaves. And eventually they enter into the middle of this maze, and there's a giant ritual going on. And it turns out that they're summoning Emily again. And yeah, Kane's not too happy about that. So they end up having a big fight. And basically they manage to push her back. Jurgen goes up and places himself on the spirit stones that she's using to power her summoning and give her strength by sucking up them Eldar souls. And then the Eldar arrive again. Truce has been reached. The Inquisitor orders the Imperium to stand down. The Eldar come in with their ships. They break through the hull and enter the fight. And the Slaaneshi demon is vanquished. Now, I would go into more detail about these things, but a lot of it's sort of just jokes and in jokes that you've got to understand from previous books. It wouldn't translate. There's no point. That's basically the rough outline. All the fun of the fair is going on during this. Little quips between all the different characters that we've met before, many times before. And just, it's a good all-round fun experience. The extracts are great as well, particularly at the end, because the Imperial Traveller explains the sort of propaganda explanation for the Eldar suddenly leaving the system and what happened and everything. It's good. It's quality. It also has, I mean, this series as well, right? Sandy Mitchell, who I thought was a woman for a very long time, but isn't. It's a bloke. He actually manages to convey reasonably realistic human interactions between the different people. And I love Grimdark. I love it. But it always has an element of comedy. And I think you always have to have that comedy in there, because It can be serious, it can be great, but you've got to have the jokes. You've got to have the jokes. And the best novels they've got here, the ones that slip in the little gags. I love Josh Reynolds' work because he always has the jokes in there. You know, characters actually just like making a light-hearted joke in the moment, that sort of thing. And it adds to it because that's what people are. In tough situations, a joke keeps you going, you know? It wears off the stress, all that shit. Not just that, the interaction between the relationship, I guess you'd say, between Amberley Vale and Kane is actually a pretty normal, realistic relationship between a man and a woman. They like each other. They work well with each other. They enjoy each other's company. And they fuck. And that's it, you know. And this is one of the only novel series where you get regular sort of Kane's banging this governor's daughter. And, you know, and he's always trying to slip it in where he can. Understandably, because why wouldn't you? You know, and he's been banging this Amberley Vale for a while. And she often, I mean, it's hinted at, it's never really said, but, you know, you've got to think she probably does. She uses her feminine wiles to get the information she needs. She often portrays herself as an aristocratic beauty that's visiting a planet, that sort of thing, which is clever. And I like that it offers that sort of reasonably realistic view of what humans are like when they are speaking to each other. Rather than this mechanical, not very realistic view of things that we get from a lot of the books, you know, men and women don't speak to each other like men and women do. In this series, they do. They do. It's good. And I wouldn't say realistic. It's not some kind of romance novel or anything, but I mean, I can see that working as a thing. They just like each other and they screw. Fair enough. Why wouldn't you? Of course. Why wouldn't you? But like I say, Sandy Mitchell, he seems to get it as well. And he's not exactly... It's PC without being PC. Like, the way he describes Slaanesh worshippers is pretty funny. There's no sympathy there. These people are degenerates, which is quite nice. And like I say, how he does the interactions between the different people. Like, this Sulla, this lieutenant, she's got a big crush on Kane, and Kane don't notice, but Amberley does, which, of course, women can always tell. You know, and there's little things like the colonel and the major of the Valhalla regiment. They go with him to the Imperial Palace, to the governor's palace at this party, and they get all the attention. And he's like, "Well, I bet they won't be going back to billet tonight. They'll be getting lucky." You know, it's true. Of course they would be. Why not? Anyway, it's a good aspect, and I like it. It makes it seem like it's not being written by an automaton or someone who doesn't understand human emotion. You know? Sandy Mitchell gets it. He's a normal person writing a funny story in a bizarre universe. It's great. I also like that Sandy doesn't appear to be up to date with or in favour of the recent changes that GW have made to some law. They have a big discussion about Eldar stuff. So they call the Eldar Knife Ears, which I think is nice, and what I'm going to call Eldar from now on, Knife Ears. And there's also the whole thing of they're trying to decide what it looks like, and Kane goes, "Oh, it looks Eldar-y." And they're like, "Eldar-y? Eldar-y." Which, of course, is taking the mick out of GW's renaming of the Eldar into the Aldari and the Drakari and all that. This is a recent book. He could have edited it. And he should have edited it a long time ago. I mean, for like 2 years, this has been in. This new naming system has been in play. And he don't care. He's still calling him Eldar. I'm sure he mentions the Imperial Guard and not really the Astra Militarum. He's just using the old names. And he's got a whole, like, half a chapter taking the piss out of the naming now. They look Eldar-y. Eldar-y. And they all, it's a proper taking the mick, you know, completely. He should have said Eldari, not Eldar, but he wasn't. He just used Eldar all the way through, probably because he thinks it's silly. But anyway, one of the things I didn't enjoy, well, not didn't enjoy, I was hoping for, but didn't get, was sort of Kane's view on the fall of Cadia, you know, the return of Gilliman, because this is happening at that time. We don't get anything like that. And it's a little bit disappointing, I have to say. So we get no clever joke about that or anything. Hopefully in the next one we will. But all in all, it's a good addition to the saga at the moment. It's got no real big implications about how things are going in the wider universe. The only thing that's really mentioned is Amberley Vale is tracking down some Tau technology traders. You know, that's a means by which the Tau infiltrates and influence human civilizations, and that's how she ended up on the planet. That's it, really. That's it. There's nothing bigger lore-wise. It's just a fun space romp. You know, it's Blackadder in space. And for that, it gets a full an 8 out of 10 from me. A good read, enjoyable, entertaining, refreshing, actually, because I've been reading a lot of the stuff recently. It's been a bit grim, a bit heavy, you know, so this was a nice palate cleanser. But yeah, that's all I've got to say on the subject at the moment. I recommend reading this series if you haven't already. This is the only one that's got an audiobook, and I think one of the short stories has as well. So you would have to read it by eye with an actual book. I'll put the links below if you want to go to Amazon and pick them up. But, you know, this is book 10. It's a big series, and I do recommend it. You'll have a lot of fun reading this, particularly when he goes to the... when he's with the Tau. There's the one where he's on a space hulk. There's the whole one with the voice of the Emperor or something like this. He's like a heretic, but he's actually a demon. And he's got a personal bodyguard of Sisters of Battle. Oof. And all the Slaaneshi stuff. It's good fun. It's good fun. I recommend it. Okay, thank you all very much for watching, and I will see you again soon. Cheers. Oh, and remember to like the video and subscribe if you're not subscribed. And if you want to help the channel out, please use the links below. Become a member, become a patron, like all these amazing champions, this role of honour that is now on your screen. Thank you, lads. And thank you to all those who do support me. Thank you very much. See you later. Bye-bye.